Blog Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Hank, and this is the Dr. Hank Show. And for those of you that have not heard the Dr. Hank Show, you're in for a treat. Because this show is about, well, it's about emotional intelligence. So for any of you out there who've not heard the show before or are interested in wondering what in the world is the Dr. Hank Show about and what could they possibly be talking about on the Dr. Hank Show, we talk about everything. We do. We talk about baseball. Congratulations to the Boston Red Sox for winning the World Series. We talk about football. Well, there were so many games on yesterday. Congratulations goes to the winners and those that didn't win. Well, I apologize. I'm sure there was something that didn't get some play that didn't get called right or whatever. But one of the things, whether you are a baseball fan or a football fan, one of the things that you have to admit is that throughout those games, you saw a lot of emotions. You saw a lot of emotions. And so that's what the show is about, talking about emotions, how we can be able to look at, understand more about emotion, be able to manage emotions for better outcome, be able to control as if you're controlling something that's technical, but controlling internally. For instance, if something doesn't happen that you were looking forward to, yeah, you might be sad about it. You might be hurt about it. But the thing is, that's an experience that you can learn from, and of course, you can get over that experience. So in a case like that, it is an emotion, but that emotion is something that you can learn from, and we can learn from all emotions that we have. And so on our show, we talk about how best to deal with the various emotions that we have. Now, we're not going to name emotions today because the list could go on and on and on. Give you an example, you know, and I just want to pause for a moment of silence, if you will, for the Pittsburgh folks, as well as for the folks in Louisville, Kentucky, who lost loved ones over the past week or so. So let's just pause for a moment of silence on that. Okay. Because with those situations, there were emotions that occurred there as well. Some we had sympathy from, others we may have empathy for. And as a matter of fact, that's the topic today in talking about empathy and why empathy is a mediator's most powerful tool. So we have a guest today. The guest is Sabrina. Let's see if I'm, hopefully I don't butcher Sabrina's last name. Sabrina Bohun. She's from Massachusetts, and she's with an organization called NAFCM, NAFCM, National Association for Community Mediation. And she's going to be talking about and sharing some insight with us about empathy. So that takes us back to why the show exists. The show exists so that we can talk about emotions and the value of emotions and how emotions help us. As a matter of fact, if we go back, let's say whether you believe in evolution or not, that's not the point right now. What we're talking about is emotions. Emotions have been around for a long time, for a real long time, as a matter of fact. And some of the first emotions that we probably remember having heard about is one called fear, okay? And let's say, hypothetically, that goes back to the times when, you know, the tiger was about to attack us when we were living back in the days of the caveman, and the tiger was about to attack us, and we were afraid. So one of the emotions that we felt was fear. And because of that, we needed to do something. And in most cases, what we chose to do was to run away or hide or something like that so that we didn't get eaten by the tiger. But there are some other emotions that we could have and we probably did feel. And that would be some of the things that we'll be talking about this morning also. So we have a great show in line and for you today. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back with our guests. But before we go to our guests, just want to share a couple of things that's coming up. One is 2019, and I know 2019 is a few months away, but the Society of Emotional Intelligence is having its annual conference in Orlando, Florida in 2019. As a matter of fact, it'll be April 5th and 6th. So what we've just done is we've put out a call for speakers. So if you or if you know someone who's interested in speaking at the conference, you can go to our website, societyofei.org, go to the conference page, scroll down. There's some information on what you'll need to do to request a proposal form to submit to be a speaker at the conference. Go to the website, societyofei.org, go to the conference page, and on the conference page, when you scroll down about midway through the conference page, it says, if you're interested in being a speaker, send your request for a speaker proposal form. Now, this proposal form is so that we receive all of the information in a consistent format so that our committee can review them and give everyone the same opportunity to be considered. Sometimes if you don't have a format, people will send 5 pages, 6 pages, or 1 page. And well, in this case, we're asking no more than 2 pages. And you have to follow the format that is outlined in that area. But anyway, so the call for speakers is now out. So again, if you're interested in being a speaker, if you know someone who is interested in being a speaker, send them over to societyofei.org, go to the conference page, and scroll down and respond to the information there. Now, the other thing that's coming up that I want you to know about, in addition to the conference, is we've just formed 2 new chapters of the Society of Emotional Intelligence. 2 new chapters. 1 chapter is in Charlotte, North Carolina. Other chapter is in Philadelphia, PA. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Charlotte, North Carolina. If you live in either one of those areas, or if you know someone that lives in any of those areas, send me an email to thedrhankshow@gmail.com, and I'll put you in touch with the chapter leaders. Those individuals will be looking for people who are interested in helping to form that chapter. Well, enough about that right now. We'll come back to that near the end of the show. Just want to check in and see if our guest is on the line with us. Let me go over and take a quick look. Good morning. You're on with the Dr. Hank Show. Sabrina, are you there?
I am here. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Sabrina. Hopefully I'm saying your last name correctly, and that is Bohun or Bohun?
Bohun, you got it right the first time.
Bohun. Okay, thank you. Well, thank you for agreeing to be our guest today. I really appreciate it. I guess all of you folks up there in Massachusetts are really out in the street celebrating today, huh?
Yes, everybody is celebrating and tired. It's been a long couple of nights.
Yes, congratulations to the Boston Red Sox, the Bo Sox, for winning the World Series. You know, when I came on the show this morning, I was talking about, you know, how emotions are shown. It didn't matter what you do, whether it was football, baseball. And so that's a classic example with all of the emotions that are just outpouring because of the Red Sox win. So, again, congratulations to you on that.
Thank you very much.
Well, you know, I'm going to say it this way. I'm a Dodger fan because I spent a lot of time in Los Angeles. So what I'd like for you to do is I would like for you to empathize with me today.
I will empathize with you. Yes. I feel for you.
Yes, please empathize. You know, we did our best. We came up, you know, a few games short. But anyway, that's our topic today, how empathy can be a mediator's, and I'm going to use the term best friend, or as you say it, most powerful tool. So before we get started into this discussion, take a moment or two and tell our listeners a little bit about Sabrina.
Oh, sure. So I am the director of mediation at an organization called Family Services of Central Massachusetts. We're located on 31 Harvard Street in Worcester, Mass. We've been in existence for a long time, so it's like 1889, I believe.
Really?
Yeah, it's been a long time. Mediation has been at the center since 2009, so we're really fortunate to have a long-standing kind of, been embedded in the community for, a long, long, long time. And we keep growing. We have several different departments that are within our organization. We have mediation, of course, and we have counseling and RSVP Worcester volunteers. They go out and do a lot with seniors. We also have a senior companion. We have home care. What else do we do? Center for Child Care Careers, if I didn't say that. We put on parents part program classes for persons who are getting divorced. We have an employee assistance program. We do a lot, so it's a nice organization to be part of.
You sure do. Wow. That must mean that you must be, and I'm going to use the term, heavily staffed. I mean, because you do so much. So how many people would you say is probably a part of the organization?
I don't want to quote the wrong number, but I think we have somewhere around 48 employees. We're not always in the building. Home care have a lot of people that go out, like home care assistants that kind of work in the field. So there's, a few. Each department has a director. So, we're there at various times depending on what's happening in our schedule. And we have a front desk to, greet people when they come into the center.
It's a nice little
place. It's, we're not that big. We're actually in the middle of getting renovated. We have an amazing landlord who's trying to fit us because we are, as you say, we have a lot going on, and space is always something that we're trying to develop. So, yeah, it's wonderful. It's a nice place to work.
Oh, great, great. Well, how did you get into mediation? Did you just wake up one day and say, I'm going to get into this thing called mediation?
No, not exactly. So when I actually went to law school, and during law school I took an ADR class, so it piqued my interest a little bit. And then as I was doing internships and working, you know, with the different lawyers, I would watch them, and I would see what was, you know, happening with cases and so forth. And I'd always think to myself, there's got to be a better way. Everybody was always very busy working, preparing for litigation. I did my internships in family law, and so
okay.
I tried my hand at litigation when I got licensed, and decided very quickly this isn't for me. So
this is not
kind of,
it, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, it's very heart-wrenching to see, you know, you see on the one hand attorneys working very hard, not seeing their own families. Yeah, I literally one night saw an attorney working until 2:30 in the morning preparing for a trial the next day, and you get to court, you get to the trial, and in the 11th hour, the people settle. Like, it's been about,
wow.
You know, most cases settle, yeah, but they do it after they've spent a lot of money fighting, a lot of money, you know, going to things that if they had just perhaps tried mediation, maybe things would have gone a little bit differently. So that's kind of what led me to mediation in 2011, and I've been doing it ever since. So.
Okay. You know, I asked the question, so how did you get into mediation and all? But maybe let me back up, and just for those that may be tuning in for the very first time and not quite sure what mediation is, mm-hmm. give us a little overview of what mediation is.
Oh, sure. So what I like to tell people when they are asking what mediation is to really just simplify it for them and say, all mediation is the opportunity for parties to sit down and have a conversation to see if they can work out whatever's brought them to mediation without the assistance of the legal system. And that's not to say that sometimes people won't have attorneys who come to mediation, but that just means that it's just, you know, a safe space to have a conversation, you know, many times conversations that cannot, or for many good reasons, happen in a court in front of a judge. For people to kind of get out all of their interests and maybe
mm-hmm.
come upon, you know, an agreement of some sort, you know, get some clarity. We always say mediation is about clarity and agreement.
Gotcha. So why, this is a tough one, but I'm going to lay it on you anyway. So why is a mediation
okay.
used more often then?
I think that mediation is something that has been around for a while, especially in the federal, at the federal level. But it's something that if we were to take your show out onto the street and ask
mm-hmm.
random people, what is mediation? I bet some people would confuse it with meditation. Oh, isn't that when you, you know, kind of sit and kind of self-reflect, you know? There's just a lot of confusion about what it is and the benefits of it, really. So it's, you know, depending on what state you're in and where you are, it's at different levels. There are some states where you actually need to become certified to become a mediator. In Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
you do not. You do have to meet some requirements, like going through at least a 30-hour mediation training. But beyond that, there's no real standard. So mediation, I think, is one of my biggest things that I'd like to get out there, like to explain to people what it is, what the benefits are of it, like you're asking, and that really is to help people get clarity and understanding about what's brought them to the table to see if they can reach agreements where they're in control and they're not in the court or the legal system where somebody's telling them what they're going to do.
Right. So with that as the background, what would a day for Sabrina look like or in terms of mediation? I mean, is that something that there would be different types or styles or different kinds of cases? Or today it may be the dog digging up someone's yard, and tomorrow it may be something else. So what would a day be life for Sabrina?
Sure. Well, thank you for asking. So I'm going to answer it in a little bit broader of a sense because I do mediate, but I tend to do higher level cases within our organization.
Okay.
So we have, because we're a nonprofit, we have volunteer mediators. So we have staff. Yeah, we have staff. We have a couple staff members who one is our courts and training coordinator, and another is a court coordinator. So what a day looks like for them is we get funding through the Attorney General's office through a grant called the Face-to-Face Mediation Program that allows us to provide free services in small claims court. So what a day looks like there, it could be the dog bit me or I got into an accident and this is not, how I want my case to go, or any number of things in small claims is what that day could look like, where our volunteers assist parties in a mediation process at court or prior to court if parties call us. That's one way. And then another way is that we do mediations at our center. We do divorce mediation, elder mediation, neighbor disputes, housing. We can do business mediations. We are getting busier with our family and divorce mediations, and I tend to do those. I obviously don't do all of them, but those are the types of cases that I do. So in a day of Sabrina, that's what my day might look like, where I'm doing all of my director responsibilities, which, include managing that face-to-face mediation program. And also we get funding through the Massachusetts Office of Public Collaboration, which is another wonderful organization that allows us to get grant monies to essentially operate and be able to provide these services within the community through a community mediation center grant. So at the center, if we get called for divorce or whatever, we do an intake process to see if the case is appropriate for mediation, because while mediation is wonderful, mediation is not for every case and for everyone. Sometimes people do need the legal system. So we do a screening.
Okay.
We'll do some safety screening questions to see if people are able to, feel like they're going to be able to communicate on an even basis, equal basis, if they're going to feel safe in the same room together, that sort of stuff. So we'll do an intake evaluation process, and then parties will come and mediate with us. And so that's, if I do mediations, that's what my day looks like. I mediate the family mediations and stuff like that.
Okay. Now, as one of the areas, did I hear you say elderly?
Yes. Yep. We do elder mediations too. And that's something that we're not as busy as I think we could be, because I think people, it's not the first thing that somebody might think of if they're having trouble, I'm arguing with my siblings about where we're going to place mom or dad or stuff like that. I don't think that it's something, mediation is something that comes immediately to the forefront of someone's mind as an option, but it certainly is.
Yeah, because I was thinking, when we're speaking of elderly, but you just said with family members, but is there other kinds of issues that the elderly may wind up being in a mediation with or about?
Absolutely. It could be about care. It could be about protection. It could be about services. It could be any number of things that it's always an option for people to use mediation, because, oftentimes I'm sure, just in your own life, and, we're all humans. We all have this basis, of how we kind of go in the world. And sometimes things come up in our lives and we don't really know how to handle it or manage it, or we'll have one perspective and somebody else we're in the conflict with has another perspective. And if we had a neutral to help us kind of see each other and hear each other, it could, maybe come out in a more positive way than being embroiled in a family conflict.
Well, there's a perception, and maybe it's my perception, but and I'm staying with elderly just for a minute here, because often is perceived that the elderly need assistance. In other words, the elderly may need someone to, I'm going to use the term, represent them in mediation or court situation. But is that the case, or does the mediator kind of make sure that that field becomes level regardless to who the elderly has the issue with?
Right. So I think what you're getting at, there's five principles to mediation. The first is that it's voluntary, so everyone participating needs to agree to participate. The process itself is confidential, so we don't report to anybody. At our center, we always say that there's two exceptions. If somebody says that they're going to hurt themselves or somebody else or commit a crime, those are things that we would kind of talk out before to see if it rose to the level of reporting. As I mentioned before, mediators were neutral. That means that we don't provide advice, make suggestions, tell people what to do. What you're touching on, I think, falls in the realm of self-determination, which is also one of the principles that someone has to have, an informed consent. And so if for an elderly person, if there was a question of if they had the capacity, if it was a capacity issue, if they had the ability to make informed decisions for themselves, then, you know, that would, it would, you know, be kind of brought to the surface. And obviously there would be a quote unquote representative, perhaps, as you say, for them, that would speak for them if they were unable to make decisions or have that self-determination or informed consent for themselves. But we would vet that out, you know, and be able to see. Sometimes I can imagine in some situations where somebody might be trying to say that that's an issue, but it's really not. I have seen before in mediations where somebody clearly needed some sort of assistance in that area because they just simply didn't have the capacity. And so we talked about what that might look like for them. So I think it depends.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, let's explore this concept of empathy for a while, because, you know, you had stated that empathy is a mediator's most powerful tool. Why is that the case?
So I have had just a fascinating time becoming, you know, more aware of myself and learning more in this mediation world, and especially now in my role as director here at Family Services, being able to beef up the training, ramp up the training. I've been seeing that. I think many centers and you know, many trainings do a very good job arming mediators about the basics, the five principles that I just touched on, what the process of mediation looks like. And I'm starting to learn that depending on where you are in the country, that process might look a little different.
In
Massachusetts, we start out in a joint session, and then we might move to private and then come back in a joint. So empathy is coming for me into this, because what I've been seeing a lot is that when new mediators especially are first learning how to become a mediator, they get very focused on learning what we call the opening speech, what we say to parties when they first come to the mediation table, and it's all of that, explaining the five principles of mediation and then what the process will look like. What they struggle with is, and they do a good job learning to hear parties, right, and then summarizing back, but I think where empathy starts to come into play for people is that we're trying to teach our participants and our students that come to us to not only listen, but to reiterate, right? So if somebody says, you know, I was running down the street and, you know, the dog came running at me and bit me, you know, we would reiterate that and say, so the dog came running down the street and bit you, yes, because we want clarity. Mediation is all about clarity.
Right,
where
right.
We can potentially empathize, and this is where empathize gets very interesting, is that we all have the capacity for empathy. And I should say that the difference between empathy and sympathy, right, is that sympathy is where you say, oh, I feel for you, you know, sorry that happened for you, you know, that when you feel bad for somebody. And empathy is when you actually take the time to see the world through their eyes and go into whatever they're talking about without judgment, right? And so, you know, it's a hard thing for people to kind of meld into, because they're always, I think mediators are very conscious about, they don't want it to appear like they are being biased or that they're making a connection with parties, right? And so I think that that's where this fear is. And I'm trying to think of an example where I've seen, which would explain the difference between empathy and fear glazing over it altogether. And there was a time once where there was a mediation happening, and one of the parties was saying some very heartfelt things, disclosing some very, very personal things about themselves.
Okay.
And instead of acknowledging or anything that was said, what the mediators did instead, well, you heard the other side said that they wanted this, because they were afraid to go into that heat or to go into that place, that space where the person had said some very personal things. And
mm-hmm.
the thing that I think one of my kind of goals as a director, right, and just somebody who's trying to help people kind of navigate what this whole mediation thing is to try to get people to get comfortable with the uncomfortable. So maybe it would help to take a step back, right? And I know you know what I'm talking about, because you do all this emotional intelligence stuff. So, but maybe for the listeners, right, to kind of take it back a step. I heard you in the beginning of the show, you kind of likened it to the caveman and the tiger, right? Like you're going to either fight or you're going to flight and run. There's actually four stages of shock. There's the fight that we all know. There's the flight. There's also the freeze, where we become paralyzed, right? And we just can't move. And then there's fawn, which people don't often talk about. But fawning would be when you're very uncomfortable in a situation. Instead of saying something, you say, oh, well, it's, you know, you're just so good at that, you know. And maybe you believe that and maybe you don't, but you're uncomfortable with whatever's happening. And so people get stuck in these stages of shock, right?
Mm.
And I think that this is where where empathy can really help people become unstuck, because what happens for all of us is that, likened to that tiger situation, we all have a neurological, a physiological response to something that happens.
Right.
So take it to the dog, right? So if I'm a child and I get attacked by a dog, right? A dog comes at me and bites me out of nowhere. My mental map of what that is going to look like for me is that every time a dog comes running at me, this dog is going to bite me. And so I might live with that. I might walk with that for the remainder of my life until something
mm-hmm.
shifts or changes for me, and I associate it with a happy event instead of a catastrophic event. And so I think what happens a lot for people, who, especially people who we see in mediation or any type of conflict, is that they've had this physiological response, and it can be dropped into any scenario. It can be dropped into a small claims case where there's something happening, or a family, a divorce matter where something's happening. And I think for all of us, that sometimes we build this armor around ourselves to protect us from Sam, that little girl who whatever, you build up this armor. And so every time you see a dog running, you're going to have that physiological response where your heart is beating and your palms are sweating and you're getting ready to either fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, right? And so
mm-hmm.
we can change that pattern, though. And so the way to change it is to recognize it. And so what we try to do in our training is to help our participants recognize all of this stuff and how empathy really is the tool to help get people out of that. Because when you see, I'm trying to think of a good example, had a mediation recently where the words that were coming out of the person's mouth did not match their body language.
Okay.
So their body language was presenting that they were in it with the other person, but their words kept saying I this, I that. And so as mediators, we can recognize, okay, the words aren't matching the actions, so something is happening there. And so one tool to kind of use empathy is to say, you know, I'm having a hard time understanding the, you know, your body language isn't matching the words that are coming out of your mouth. What is this meaning for you? And then it kind of recognizes us pulling empathy in, where you're recognizing that that person is maybe stuck or having a hard time, and it's letting them know, I'm here in it with you. Like, what is this for you? And then outpoured all of this, like, great information for everybody in the mediation to hear and for that person to recognize for themselves. So I'm not sure if I'm doing a great job explaining what this is, but
I think you're doing great.
Powerful.
I think you're doing
great.
Yeah, because what I was thinking about as you were talking about that is sometimes if you do have two parties, and let's say the mediator is empathizing with one, what happens if the other party mistakes empathy for sympathy? Because sometimes, you know, let's say to empathize, we might say something like, I understand your point, or I see your point of view, or let me make sure that I heard you correctly. But the other party who is on the other side, they start to feel that you're spending, you know, a little more time, probably, as you had mentioned earlier, kind of siding with the other party because they're mistaking empathy for sympathy. So what happens then?
So actually, I don't see that very often. I think I can imagine how you're kind of thinking that could happen. I'm trying to play that scenario out in my head that happened just very recently. I think it was like a more of an aha moment of the other person, like, well, yeah, why is that sort of thing? And so then we kind of talked it out.
Oh, that was good then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then we kind of talked it out, and a lot of other things came to light, and that made sense. And both of them are shaking their heads, like, yes, we both agree. So I can see where it could be conceivable that would happen. Sometimes when this more of this empathy stuff is happening, it's mostly in private sessions, where we tell people, you know, we're here for you right now. So whatever you want to share with us, if there's something that you don't want us to tell the other side, let us know at the end and we'll keep that confidential.
Okay.
So it's more of a space where people are more likely to kind of dump, because that's what we're trying to get people to do really in mediation, is to just dump it all out, just get it all on the table. This is a safe place to have a conversation. So.
Yeah, okay. No, that's good, because I'm just thinking if the other party is, you know, privy to that part of the discussion, they could, you know, wind up, you know, feeling or believing that you're, you know, in the corner or on the side of the other party. But then on the other hand, as you pointed out, it might be an opportunity for the other side to actually hear it from a different perspective. And then they go, oh my gosh, I never thought of it that way. You know, this person could be experiencing or dealing with something completely different from what my interpretation or how I saw it, you know? And so therefore, gosh, maybe I'm being I'm being more about me than being about the situation. Wow. So that could be another opportunity for empathy to kind of come into play there. You know, do you ever ask the other party if they're able to empathize with the other party? You know, I mean, just can you see
not directly?
The other...
Yeah. Not directly, no. We don't. So I see this as a mediator. Can you see this as a party over here? Like, no, we wouldn't do that. But if it ends up organically kind of happening, where, you know, if we value what each other is saying, right, and we're taking the time to hear each other and recognizing that sometimes when somebody, you know, acts out in anger, it's not really that they're angry. It's, you know, that they're really hurt. And they, you know, and so by recognizing those things and having those conversations, even if people are together, recognizing them, it helps parties see and hear each other a lot better.
Wow, yeah. And I'm thinking about, because you were sharing, you know, like each party kind of has that opening statement or whatever, where they get to talk about. That's an excellent time for the other party to at least hear it from that other person's point of view at that point in time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, if I'm concerned about, you know, having things the way that I want them, then I'm probably not going to be listening too well. It's like I hear it, but I'm not internalizing what the person is saying because, well, I don't want it to change my mind or don't want it to impact the way that I might be feeling, or I'm here to, quote, win, even though I know we're supposed to, you know, mutually agree on things. But that's sometimes kind of hard for me to want to give up my point of view or my side. It just sounds like I'm rambling now, but I'm going through the empathy piece here, you know, and that's one of the areas that I like to talk about, because if someone is truly listening and truly willing to invest the time to understand the other person's point of view, they're subject to change theirs more often than not, I think, because it should have that kind of an impact. Most people don't have all of the information anyway of the other party. They only have what they think is what's happening and not really what's... In other words, there's something we call reality testing. And so their reality testing isn't actually what's really going on. It's probably different from what they've conjured up or fantasized about or whatever, and having the opportunity to hear it will maybe cause them to be more empathetic with the other party. Just a thought.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm not suggesting you change anything that you guys are doing, because you've been around for a long time, so you got to be doing a lot of things right and a lot of things really well. I'm just thinking as we're talking about how some of these things can play out. So,
go ahead. No, it does, Dr. Hank. It does play out that way. You know, last night I was watching. This is a topic that I'm so passionate and so interested in. I just keep trying to eat up anything that I can find on the subject. And last night I actually watched a really wonderful taping of a Tony Robbins session. Robbins, I'm going to butcher his last name. You know who I'm talking about, right? That big man. He does work with couples all the time and stuff.
Yeah.
Tony Robbins. Yeah.
He did
this segment with a couple who was on the brink of divorce, and talking with them, he got them to hear and see each other's point of view. And that's exactly what empathy is, right? It's like it played out right on the screen before my eyes, where the husband was ready to leave. He was not happy about the wife had put on some weight. And, you know, that was one of the reasons he was saying, you know, he wasn't attracted to her anymore, and he wasn't feeling whatever. And as they dug deeper into it, it was that he didn't feel safe. She was very strong-minded and strong-willed and made him feel powerless as a man, like it came out of it during this thing. And so she was hearing all this as he was talking to him, and then he was hearing everything that she was saying, that how she didn't feel certain. She didn't feel certain about their future. She didn't feel certain about anything, and that she needed to feel certain before she could show him love. And it was just a really fascinating kind of, and yeah. And so those big things that those big type of aha things, I keep finding myself in them more and more, like whether it be in our training when with our participants, we've injected improv into our training, because improv makes you think on your feet and you don't have time to squirm sort of stuff. So we do a role play of sorts, or an improv of sorts, where we ask the participants, wherever they're comfortable, there's three sections in the room, choose one. The first one is where, you know, you just say something, you know, low level, like, oh, you know, I got stuck in traffic this morning. The second space is a place where you can share something that's a little bit more personal, like, you know, I have two sisters and a brother. And the third place is where you can share something really deep that affected you, like, you know, if you're willing to go there, because we want to give participants an opportunity, and we practice reiterating at that stage. And we want to give participants an opportunity to feel what it feels like to be that party sitting on the other side of the table in mediation, because parties come to us with all of their angst, all of that. And so as we do this exercise, inevitably it happens this past training, it happened before, where somebody has a real awakening kind of aha moment. Yeah. And it's always the person who is brave to go in the deep section, right? And it's hard. And we tell people, you know, we're here for you. We are here. We're going to be right in it with you. It's all of that, all of what empathy is about, being in the heat with somebody and saying, I am here for you. I'm not going to let you fall. We're going to walk through this together. And so it's a very powerful improv that we do. And again, it happened just again in this last training. Somebody had a real shift in themselves, had a real shift, a real awakening sort of thing, a realization, because after putting themselves there and we you know, practice the reiterating, it always comes down to, for me as one of the trainers, I want to make sure that this person walks out whole too. And that's in any mediation that we do, that's something we don't want to leave people broken and in shambles. We want to leave you whole. And so at the end of it, there was this whole summarization, and then you know, a question, you know, well, what do you need to feel whatever? And so and the person was like, oh, I never would have thought of that, or I never would have whatever. And so it really helps people feel it for themselves, because once you feel something, you're then better able to directly work with somebody to help them get out of something, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's only when we can kind of walk in the heat with somebody and get them out the other side. To which there's another fabulous person that I would like to mention. Have you heard of Brené Brown?
The name I've heard of, but I'm not quite sure in what capacity, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't know who she is, you should look her up, because she is all about this empathy stuff. And so she's done a life's work for some time now on shame. On guilt versus shame. So like how sympathy and empathy have different definitions, so do guilt and shame. And so guilt is when you think that, you know, I did something bad, and shame is when you think I am bad. And I think for a lot of people who come to mediation, they're stuck in those patterns also. And it's only when we can become vulnerable as people, as participants in a mediation, or as mediators ourselves, when we can be vulnerable with each other, is when we can walk to that empathy path through the heat and out the other side. So it's pretty incredible.
And you say it's Brené Brown?
Brené, B-R-E-N-E, Brown. Brené Brown.
B-R-E-N-E. Brown. Okay.
Yep. She is amazing.
I'm just jotting that down.
Yeah, you should. she's amazing. So I saw the first time I came across her was actually through my LinkedIn account in a TEDx, one of the TEDx things. And
yes.
she did this speech, and she had her coming out on TEDx about her story, and then had some shame is probably the best way to put it. Like, oh my God, I said that in front of 500 people, and one of her friends was like, no, it was like thousands of people. And then she was like, I can't believe that I did that. And then she tells this other story about how, because she talked about vulnerability and how important it is for all of us, and how we need to start embracing vulnerability and shame and all of that, recognizing
mm-hmm.
all of that in order to be empathetic with each other. And so
yes.
in one story, one woman called her Vulnerability Ted, like she's a superhero. She's like, that's my new superhero name, Vulnerability Ted. And I just absolutely am having just an amazing time learning about her, reading everything I can get on my hands about her, and trying to figure out how I, as you know, the director here, or how I even want to move as a mediator in the mediation
mm-hmm.
field, what I can do to kind of bring this to the forefront and to help others. So it's, you know, I keep, sorry, you have a question? I could keep rambling.
Well, no. I don't call it rambling. I call it sharing information. So you naturally share information. No, I was mm-hmm. listening to what you were saying, because my thought was, I got to get that, because I want to find out and I want to hear all of those same kinds of things, because, you know, it does take courage to be willing to be vulnerable, you know.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's because, you know, well, I don't want to preach to the choir either, but it's just, you know, the willingness to do that, the willingness to, you know, to let it out, or to be seen, or to be known is something that's not an easy thing to do. But once you
not
do
at all.
It, you feel much better about it, because it's not like you've lost something, you've actually gained.
Yes.
So
you know what,
that's
one of my that's exactly right. One of my favorite things that I learned about her in one of the speeches is she talked about this Theodore Roosevelt quote called "Man in the Arena." And when I first took this job as director, I think at every stage in my life, and maybe it's this way for a lot of people, you wonder, and Brené actually has a term for it, the shame gremlins, right? Like, am I good enough for this? And what were you thinking? You know what I mean? Sort of thing. And so you're always doing that self-check against your
yes.
What you think of yourself, and maybe what others are thinking or whatever, and if it fits, you know, or how they align with each other. And I came across that quote when I was dealing with a lot of big things that when I first took this job, and then she talked about it, and I was like, I'm on the right path. I must be onto something. If she's talking about this and I found that at the right time, then I know I'm doing the right thing and on the right path. So
absolutely. Must be. It's amazing how those things happen, you know, how things
mm-hmm.
show up at the time when you need it. Otherwise,
exactly.
it doesn't show up, or you don't see it, or it passes by, and was because you weren't ready, or the time wasn't right, or however we might term it, you know. But
mm-hmm.
when the time is right, or when you're ready, things show up, or they manifest themselves, or they put themselves right in your line of sight or vision. So you go,
mm-hmm.
oh, wow, this is exactly what I'm looking for, or this is exactly
mm-hmm.
what I was hoping to hear, or didn't know where to find it, but now this is it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, you're passionate about those things, and I'm very, very passionate around the whole idea of emotional intelligence. And so that's my
mm-hmm.
go-to-sleep remedy, and that's my wake-up remedy. I'm, you know, in some way or another talking about, you know, emotions and emotional intelligence. So I appreciate, you know, you taking time today to be on the show. to share Absolutely. Your thoughts
Thank
and
you.
Ideas. Yeah, share your thoughts and ideas. Before I let you go, is there any words of wisdom that you'd like to share with us?
Yes, please. So just that
yes.
when you're thinking about empathy, right? When you're thinking about empathy, empathy really connects the head and the heart. I think oftentimes people think it's one or the other when you're making a decision. I need to trust my gut. I need to trust my head. Empathy is the space that helps you connect the two, and it's only when you connect the two that you'll really get to the best kind of space.
So it's a connecting both the head and the heart, not just one or the other, but both. Which,
exactly.
you know, I can see that can be tough sometimes because we have thinkers and we have planners, you know, out there. And we have those that, you know, rely solely on their emotions. And, you know, I was doing a presentation a couple of weeks back around decision making and how we make decisions, and the fact that there are people who rely on logic to make decisions and others who rely on emotions to make decisions. But, you know, a lot of the research tells us that most of the decisions that are made are emotional decisions. And the fact that we really need to make sure that we've kind of checked in with our logic side and our emotional side, and use our wise brain, a wise mind to make that decision. So that's sort of the head and the heart, you know, what we're talking about there, you know, to do that. So I'm in agreement with you. I'm going to be singing from that same song sheet that you're singing from, Sabrina. So
wonderful.
So again, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. You know, and anytime that you're thinking about, what can I do some Monday? Well, feel free to talk to the NAFCM National, and love to have you on the show again to talk about, you know, those things that you're passionate about. So again, thank you. Look forward to hearing from you again, and I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so very much. This has been my honor.
Thank you. This is Dr. Hank, and you've been listening to the Dr. Hank Show. And don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. If there's something that you'd like to talk about, we have a couple of minutes left, so feel free to give us a call at 929-477-1423. That's 929-477-1423. And just kind of share with me what's on your mind. We'd love to hear you. So call in. Let's hear you. This is Dr. Hank. Is there someone on the line?
Yes, there is.
Yes.
I wanted to ask your guest, how does she know when the participants are at a point where they can, where they're at a win-win? I mean, during the mediation process, if we talk about empathy, are you trying to create a win-win scenario when it's all said and done?
Okay. Well, she's gone right now. Can I ask you to do me one favor? Because that's something that I'm sure she'd like to respond to. Can you send that question to me here at the Dr. Hank Show at gmail.com? And I'll make sure that she gets it and respond back to you. Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I wish I had caught you a little bit earlier before she signed off. But, yeah, just put it together, send it to the Dr. Hank Show, and I will make sure that she gets it, and we'll respond back to you as soon as she's drafted a response. So thank you for your question. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. And you've been listening to the Dr. Hank Show on Blog Talk Radio. So if you're a first-time listener, please come back next week. We're going to have another great show for you. Hope to see you back here, same time, same place. This is Dr. Hank saying, hey, please, everyone go out and have a EI day. And this is just to let you know that we appreciate not only our guests, but we appreciate you.